Assalamu alaikum and good evening, listeners. This is News and Current Affairs Channel of Radio Pakistan, Islamabad. You are listening to your favorite program, Perspective, and I am your host, Yusra Mushtaq. You can listen to us by tuning in to the frequencies Islamabad 1152 kHz, Lahore 1332 kHz, Karachi 639, Quetta 756 and Peshawar 1170 kHz. Listeners, as you know that in Perspective we highlight and debate the issues which are vital for national, international and regional importance, and today we have three things in our agenda. We have two topics which is related to the very latest development. First is about the Trump tweets are not considered official US policies, and this has been stated by Prime Minister Shahid Khaqan Abbasi in an interview to Washington Post, stated that he does not consider US President Donald Trump's tweet on Pakistan as part of an American policy. And with respect to that, we also have an important development. It's about Pakistan and Indonesia. Pakistan and Indonesia have signed 4 MOUs for cooperation in energy, trade, training and education. And along with this, today we are going to have an exclusive interview which is related to the International Day of Tolerance. And these are the three things in our agenda today. So first is about the Pakistan-US relationship, and we know that from the couple of days, especially with the start of the new year, the Pakistan and the US relationship have seen many ups and downs, especially after the Donald Trump's tweet. And in this respect, Prime Minister Shahid Khaqan Abbasi maintained in an interview that he does not consider US President Donald Trump's tweet on Pakistan as a part of an American policy. Official policies are not communicated via tweets, but rather through official documents or meetings. On New Year's Day, Donald Trump had tweeted that US foolishly gave aid to Pakistan over the course of 15 years, but Islamabad remained deceitful by providing safe havens to terrorists from Afghanistan. And when asked if he had responded to the tweet, he said it was simple, the ground realities do not support what President Trump is saying. We are committed to fighting the war against terror and there are no two way about it. And on the other side, at the bilateral ties, Pakistan and Indonesia have signed 4 MOUs for cooperation in energy, trade, training and education. The first agreement deals with the import of LNG and POL products from Indonesia, and Minister for Energy Sardar Awais Khan Lagari and Indonesian Minister for Energy and Mineral Development signed the agreement. Prime Minister Shahid Khaqan Abbasi and Indonesian President Joko Widodo held a meeting in Islamabad today. And with this, listeners, we are going to take a short break.
Radio Pakistan's News and Current Affairs Channel presents in-depth insight into important national and international issues. With expert opinion by eminent analysts, whether it's national security, economy, foreign policy, or infrastructure development. Reaching out to our listeners from Gilgit to Gawadar, from Khyber to Karachi, with unbiased shades of opinion. Radio Pakistan, voice of the nation. Keep listening to the English show Perspective for latest news and analysis from Monday to Saturday from 6:10 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Welcome back, listeners, and as we are going to switch towards our first topic, that's about the Trump tweets are not considered official US policy, and this has been stated by Prime Minister Shahid Khaqan Abbasi. Abbasi further added that since the past 15 years, the US and Pakistan's relation have been going downhill despite maintaining a strong relationship prior to that. He said the US was not providing any economic aid to Pakistan and the amount of security aid was also minimal. The PM also reiterated that Pakistan is fighting the largest war on terror. We have 200,000 troops fighting a war against terror today on the western border. We have lost 6,500 troops. We have defeated the same enemy the rest of the world failed to defeat in Afghanistan on the same terrain with our own resources. And this has been well stated by the Prime Minister Shahid Haqqani Abbasi while giving an interview to the Washington Post, that the ground realities do not support what President Trump is saying. We are committed to fighting the war against terror and there are no two ways about it. And listeners, you all know this thing, that when we say about the Pakistan's and the US relationship, no doubt that it's a relationship with so many ups and downs, but at the same time, since 9/11 until today, we have seen that Pakistan, being a frontline ally, fighting very strongly against terrorism at large, and this thing has also been very much clear by the made clear by the President Shahid Haqqani Abbasi, that the global war on terror, which was launched by the allied forces by invading Afghanistan, was actually being questionable, that how far these allied forces really made up with the success, and it is the Pakistan army which made it possible to find out and even to maintain a very credible counter-terrorism mechanism in order to defeat the madness of terrorism. It's been 17 years that Pakistan, not only fighting or being a frontline ally, Pakistan is also being victim of this terrorism. And this is a fact that it's been long that Pakistan and the Pakistani nation have suffered so badly in relation to the suicide attacks, in relation to the bombings everywhere, and the whole internal security was questionable because of terrorism. And now we have seen that there are series of military operations which have been launched by the Pakistan Armed Forces and also by the government of Pakistan to make this thing possible, to make Pakistan free of terrorism, to curb the madness of terrorism, and also to root out the major origins or the causes of terrorism. And in this respect, we have seen that from the couple of few years, 3 or 5 years, that we are able enough to say that yes, Pakistan is not only strongly defeating terrorism, but also Pakistan is successful in curbing the terrorism, in finding a very successful strategy of countering terrorism. And with this U.S. President Donald Trump's tweet, we have seen that the ground realities are absolutely different. The ground realities is this, that Pakistan, the role of the Pakistan is an unavoidable and undeniable entity in this region, where we have seen that if really somebody wants to end up with the terrorism, they need a Pakistan collaboration. And Pakistan on the other side maintains this position that global war on terror or fighting a war on terror is not a unilateral agenda. It needs a collective effort. Fighting terrorism is actually a collection of a mutual interest. It is equally vitally important for everyone who is living in this world. And that is why what Pakistan is doing in the wake of terrorism is actually a favor to the rest of the world. Because we have seen this thing, that with Afghanistan, after being the allied forces have their foots on Afghanistan from almost 17 years, can we really end up with terrorism on the other side? That for Pakistan, Pakistan really made this thing possible to reduce the ratio of terrorist incidents in the country, to reduce the rate of terrorism in the country. And this thing has been supported and notified not only by the national sources, but also by the international worldwide community. And the international community also acknowledges the fact that Pakistan has really done a lot in fighting the war on terrorism. And with this, listeners, we are going to switch over to our second agenda, and it's about an exclusive interview which was taken by Mr. Javed Khan Jadoon on the occasion of International Day of Tolerance, and it's a rebroadcast segment.
Assalamu alaikum, I'm Javed Khan Jadoon, and today we have two distinguished guests in our studio, and the occasion is International Day of Tolerance, which is being observed today across the globe. And we would be talking about the significance of the day, why the day is being observed, and how it can help promote tolerance in the world. I would like to introduce Neil Bunay. Neil Bunay is not new. He has been with us on so many occasions. And Neil is the resident coordinator, United Nations in Islamabad. And the second distinguished guest is Vibeke Jensen. She is the head of UNESCO in Islamabad, and we'll be talking about the day which is being observed not only in Pakistan but across the world. Welcome to our show. Starting from you, Neil, I would like to know, what is the significance of the day? Of course, we understand that tolerance is, or rather intolerance, is becoming is one of the most important issues across the globe in so many terms. So why we are observing this particular day, and how we can promote tolerance?
Well, I think why we're observing goes back to the reason the United Nations was created in 1945, when UNESCO was created as well. And if you look at the United Nations Charter, about 8 or 9 lines down is the phrase, we've been created to practice tolerance, to live together in peace with one another as good neighbors, just to correct it.
And even as communities.
As communities, yeah.
As well.
So it's very much sort of the reason for existence of the UN is this issue of tolerance. But I think probably it was declared in 1995 because it also recognized that there were a lot of tensions that had come up after the end of the Cold War, with all the changes in Eastern Europe, with communities mixing with each other much more. And it was essential that we make a restatement, because with much more mixing, much more globalization, it becomes even more important to have tolerance. Societies work well if people are good neighbors, if people are within the community and treat each other with respect. If they don't treat each other with respect, those societal issues, first at the community level, can go up to the national level, even the international level, and then you have the problems which the United Nations was created to solve.
Vibeke, as Neil mentioned, the globalization. Do you believe that globalization has really helped promote tolerance in the world? And in the recent past, we have seen that despite globalization, we have witnessed so many instances where we see incidents of intolerance, which is on the rise.
Well, you are very right that clearly there's a lot more to be done in the world today in terms of continuing to promote tolerance. And I would even go a step further and say, you know, we really have to focus on inclusion. Inclusion is really a very sort of proactive word and action, in a way, to embrace everyone and to bring everyone into mainstream development. In a world community where we are respectful for one another, and where we have shared values and goals that we are moving towards. And this is, of course, also what has been agreed among member states 2 years ago, when the Sustainable Development Goals were created and agreed unanimously among all member states. Really focusing on tolerance, respect for diversity, and inclusion. So this very proactive way of creating communities and societies where peace is the dominating situation.
Vibeke, when we talk about the issue of intolerance, I think we agree that there's many factors which are contributing towards intolerance in the world. For example, lack of education and lack of understanding of social values. And furthermore, I think to coexist with each other, we need to understand each other as well. As we say that it's a global village now, we say it's a global village. So in a global village, if there are less conflicts, societal conflicts, and conflicts between states. But we have seen in the last couple of years, we have seen the conflicts are on the rise, for example, in the Middle Eastern region, in Afghanistan, and even the line of control between India and Pakistan has once again has gone hot, rather than observing the ceasefire agreement which was concluded between the two countries. I'm just mentioning because these are the instances where we see that peaceful coexistence and tolerance is being compromised. You agree with that?
Yes, I mean, it's also very clear that conflicts are changing. They're not the same as they were when the UN system was created and when UNESCO was created. actually just a few weeks after almost Second World War was ended. The International Day for Tolerance was agreed by UNESCO's Board and General Conference in 1995, which was on our 50th birthday. So we're celebrating 72 years on the 16th of November. And it's very clear, I mean, but what would the situation have been like if the UN system hadn't existed? We can only guess about that.
Yes.
I think it's important to stress that we need to continue to reinforce the work that UNESCO and many, many others, colleagues from the UN system and development partners and governments are doing in education. And this is about, of course, getting children to school in the first place where they're not in school. But it's also really about the values and the attitudes that we are promoting in the education system. And for that reason, I in particular, and UNESCO in particular, are very happy that we have a very strong goal four in the Sustainable Development Goals. And in particular, a target which is talking about the promotion of respect for cultural diversity, respect for cultural heritage, gender equality, promoting global citizens, which is kind of maybe a new concept, but which is also related to the whole overall concept of tolerance and inclusion, which is really about accepting that diversity is a good thing, that societies move forward when we are not all thinking exactly the same way, because that's also the opportunity for helping us all to think even more forward in terms of solutions, right? So this respect for cultural diversity, whether it's at the family level, whether it's at the community level or among countries,
at the countries
is incredibly important and should rather be seen as a richness and as a capital to help us all move forward than as a negative factor. So I think that's really the message today, that this is something that we, of course, have to work a lot more on. And when I say we, I mean really all of us, governments, the UN system, development partners, and making sure that our education systems are in line with promoting these values.
Rebecca, this is what we would like to see. But let us see what Neil Bunis says about it. Of course, these are the ideals, that we would like to promote cultural diversity and religious tolerance as well. And she rightly pointed out that education and tolerance, they go together. But Neil, is it happening on the ground? What we would like to see, what we dream, the dream of a global citizenship, is
well,
it
Well, I think in some ways it's happening. I was just in North Waziristan last week in place called Spinwar and Data Kel and Miran Shah and Miran Ali, and I went to schools. And one of the encouraging things there was they actually were starting with virtually early childhood education, which they hadn't really had before that. And that's one of the key things, is to start working with children at a young age to appreciate that there's actually a diversity of views, to appreciate that respect of each other, to appreciate other communities. And that's even more important in areas that have been affected by conflict, where to a certain extent in people who bred and advocated intolerance created disturbance. But it also has to happen at different levels in the education system. It has to go right through and be reinforced. I think it's especially important at the teenage age, when the teenagers start to think for themselves, they start to question the parents, they try to question authority. And there's good work, but I think in Pakistan one of the challenges is still, as we've talked about before, that although there's been tremendous progress in education, you still have too many kids who are out of school. And you have children who are in alternative education, such as madrasa. So, I mean, one of the things that I know UNICEF is involved with, for example, here in Pakistan, is to provide work in madrasas on community health and also issues that relate to tolerance as well. So I think it's just important in the education system to start at the very beginning, but to work right through the system, because there's countervailing pressures as well. There's a natural tendency, I think, in all societies when you're faced with rapid change to sort of turn inwards, to sort of turn into your, for want of a better word, your tribe, rather than open up. And that's not the right response. It's happening maybe too much in the world right now, but it needs to be countered. because the costs of it not being countered are huge. And I think what's unique about the SDGs is the first time, I think, a global set of goals has so explicitly said that issues of inclusion, issues of inequality, hamper development, hamper peace. And that's a good recognition, but it's a challenge to translate it into reality on a day-to-day ground with all the challenges people face.
Rebecca, when we say that we talk about intolerance, I think without mentioning religious intolerance, we would not be doing justice to our topic and discussion. We have seen that in the recent past, religious intolerance has been on the rise. My first question is, of course, nobody would like to see religious intolerance growing in any society. But secondary question is, would it be appropriate to equate religion with extremism or terrorism? The two questions, but related questions.
I mean, we don't want to see any kind of tolerance. And often, you know, intolerance breed more intolerance, and we need to kind of turn that vicious cycle around. So I think that across the board, we really, it's a question of promoting tolerance, promoting, putting in process a situation where we are focusing on the positive aspects. Cultural tolerance, religious tolerance, tolerance among genders, tolerance among minorities, and all of that. It's often the intolerance, you know, regarding all these groups often go together. So I think we really need to adopt a very comprehensive and broad approach to things, and as I said, you know, it's, and Neil has said also, it's through the education system, but education, formal education, informal, non-formal education, and there I would say that the media, for instance, play a very important role also in communicating, you know, and promoting tolerance and not falling to the other.
Rebecca has highlighted an extremely important question, the role of media. Neil, we have seen, being part of the media, we have seen that media, some or the other, on a 0 to 10 scale, I think media is doing a wonderful job, I would say that, as far as promoting tolerance is concerned. But in certain instances, and I would say a section of the media, whether it is Pakistan or a developed world country, media is also contributing in creating intolerance. When we talk about when there is an incident, a terror incident, of course we understand that whether it takes place in Pakistan or anywhere in the world, it is a terror incident. But somehow or the other, a section of the media labels it as Islamic terrorism. Yeah. And then this equation becomes problematic and creates more complications. I think media should avoid such labeling.
No, you're completely right. I mean, I've lived in Pakistan a long time, so I identify very much with the country. And when you see an incident happening in another country where there's a terrorist incident, I sort of say, I hope it's not a Pakistani, because I know what's going to happen. Because what's going to happen is people are going to blame their neighbor who might be from Pakistan, who is 10,000 miles away from me. It might be the most tolerant, wonderful, charitable person in the world, but that person gets blamed because they're Pakistani, or they get blamed because they're Muslim. And the media often accentuates that. So there is a tremendous responsibility for the media not to create a sort of cycle where one comment becomes another comment.
Yes.
And you then have that feed into an evil cycle that leads to people actually taking action against someone
that
who happens to be...
That becomes part of the problem, part of the solution.
Becomes part of the problem. It can be part of the solution, and you've got both sides happening. It's a tricky issue, because in some sense you should say you should then regulate the media quite carefully so that it doesn't promote hate speech. On another side, you've got to balance that with not over-regulation, that you limit the freedom of media and people's right to different access. It's not easy in any society, but I think there is a line, and I think the UN has recognized that, where media must not promote hate. Media should promote understanding.
And tolerance.
And tolerance, yeah. Tolerance. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think if
I may just also add, societies are moving very fast nowadays. We are all moving very fast, and we have television almost 24 hours or radio 24 hours. And the breaking news kind of snappy, short announcement of things happening sometimes has not been well enough researched. So sometimes news are broken, which then later on turns out that, it's a lot more nuanced. Mm-hmm. But people don't really have the time to continue. Stories are not followed through. So many things are happening around the world, and so many things are communicated. So we can't always focus on what was the conclusion then on a story. And I think we all from time to time experience that we hear about something and it's in the news for one or two days. And then 6 months later, all of a sudden you start thinking, what was the ending on that story? Mm-hmm. And if you sometimes go back and start looking at where the ending was, it was not exactly what you thought.
Exactly.
So I think that is also a problem, because sometimes news are coming out, but maybe not sufficiently well
investigated
mm-hmm. and several sources brought in and so on. And that's also some of the things we're working on in Pakistan and in the world at large, is training journalists and having code of conducts and emphasizing this need for really proper investigation of the stories. So sources, various sources are brought in and listened to, and views are presented, because that's also part of promoting tolerance.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you. Vibeke, as the UNESCO head in Pakistan, as country representative, you are in Pakistan for the last couple of years.
3 years.
For 3 years. Mm. If you talk about Pakistan in specific and the issue of tolerance or intolerance, how would you evaluate, and what would be your solutions where you could sort of suggest to the government of Pakistan where it can help promote, where it is lagging behind? And the civil society, second tier, and the media, of course, we already mentioned the role of media as well. So on three tiers, at the government level, at the civil society's level, and at the media level, what can be done? Which you believe that if you think that more needs to be done to promote tolerance in Pakistan, as far as the minorities are concerned, and of course the religious minorities as well, and of course the other segments of the society.
Of course, a lot
on
more
on economic basis as well.
A lot more needs to be done in Pakistan and in the world at large. I mean, there's not a single country in the world that
but
doesn't.
But sorry
have
for intervention, Rebecca. If we start with half glass.
Pakistan, no. A lot more has to be done. And of course,
as then we can talk about the half glass unfilled.
As head of UNESCO, we have to. My focus is really on education, on culture, on science, and on the media development. So we are working in all these four sectors, and fundamental to the organization's existence is really this focus on promoting tolerance and inclusion. If I may, I'd just like to quote from the preamble to our constitution that says, since wars begin in the minds of men, and some of us like to add women nowadays, it is in the minds of men and women that the defenses of peace must be constructed. Yes. And UNESCO's task is to work with all stakeholders in building those defenses of peace through education, through culture, through science, and through the media. And, I've been here also 10 years ago in Pakistan and worked specifically on education in that point in time. And when I came back in 2014, I was quite pleased to see that indeed the enrollment in primary and secondary education and also at university has increased. We have many more children in school. They also stay there longer, and there are more children that have the opportunity to go to higher education. Mm-hmm. But there are still 22.6 million out of school.
Out of school.
simultaneously with bringing those children into school and making sure they stay there longer, we also really have to focus on the quality of education. And by quality, I don't only mean learning to read, write, and mathematics and so on. It is really also learning the soft skills. And as I said earlier on, the attitudes and the behavior that can contribute to take their communities and Pakistan at large forward in a sustainable, peaceful manner. So I think we need to work a lot with schools and educators.
And with the local community as well.
With the local community, and we're doing that very much in our programs on girls education in very remote areas of Pakistan, where we are really bringing the school and the community together and having dialogue between parents and teachers and school. And even if parents are illiterate, they will want to know what is happening in the school. They will want to know the progress of their children. They will also want to be respected as parents of this child. So, you know, we are really working a lot in many communities all over Pakistan in making this thing happen. But again, there's a lot to be done also on curriculum, on textbook, yes, on activity-based learning. And I would like to say that there are so many things that can be done in the teaching learning process, in the classroom, where you don't talk about tolerance or inclusion, but you practice it. And I think that's really the important thing. It's about the practice, because you can give a lecture on what diversity and respect means, but it has to be practiced every day, every minute. And you know, a lot of children go to school, but they're not necessarily really included in the teaching learning process. Maybe they have some disabilities. Maybe they come from not a mainstream ethnic group. Maybe they speak a different language, which is very often in Pakistan. And they can be in school, but they're not really learning, because they may sit sort of at the margin of the classroom, and they are not the ones being really included in the process. So that's where we have to work a lot with the teachers and school heads and so on to make sure that that process becomes much more inclusive and, yes, and tolerant. Now, in terms of, so we also work a lot with the media, and we work on journalism training. And
for example, this very sitting we are having today, we are talking about promoting tolerance. I think this is the contribution which a national broadcaster is doing in that direction.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know, and you're doing that probably every day. I don't listen to all your programs, but to many of your programs. I would just like to say also one thing we don't really have in Pakistan, but that has been extremely useful in many other countries, is to have community media.
Yes.
To have media, and in particular radio, where listeners are really engaged, involved, they're setting the agenda for the programs, and they have an opportunity also, if there are community conflicts, for instance, to debate these, you know, they can be facilitated in finding solutions. I have seen amazing results of community radios. We don't have it in Pakistan, but I still think Radio Pakistan is very much listened to.
Yes,
and
yes,
you can adopt some of these features,
yes, yes,
of community radios,
of course,
and also help in some of those areas.
It's a very useful suggestion, and we would definitely try and incorporate in our programs as well. Mm. Neil, Vibeke has given a very, very overarching view of the situation in Pakistan. And you also mentioned your visits to North Waziristan, South Waziristan, the tribal areas. You see a silver lining in Pakistan, as far as the child education is concerned, because changes are taking place. I believe since you have been interacting with communities and visiting areas as well, there used to be education for the children. Maybe in certain cases, schools were available, teachers were available, but the girls were not being sent to the schools. But now I think things are changing.
No, things are changing.
So that would
and,
be.
I think again, it's a small part of Pakistan. I know Pakistan is 210 million people,
yes,
and Fatah is only 7 million people. But since I was just there,
but
I was in Spinwar.
But why I said, sorry for interruption, Neil, such pockets are in Balochistan as well,
yeah,
in parts of Punjab as well, in parts of KP as well. I think
the point is change can come, and to a certain extent, this dislocation of so many people from Fatah meant that they moved out into other areas where, for example, there was a more open attitude towards girls' education and girls' participation in society. So now they've come back, and I was in this small set of schools in Spinva. There was a good school for boys that had been affected by the fighting, was being rebuilt, but there was another school for girls just 5 minutes walk away that we went to, and it was run by someone in the village who had given their own land for it, and it was lively, it was full. When we went to meet the sort of small jirga when we were in Datukail, we asked what were priorities, and they said girls' education, and that's my particular meetings, but we also do proper surveys, and the proper surveys come up with that. So it shows that you can have a change in society, and I think there's lots of changes like that, silver linings, as you said, in Pakistan. And the trick, I think, is just to multiply those and not let the, where you have instances of intolerance, to not have those multiply, to keep those contained, and rather build on these good examples.
Well, if I may add, I also really think that having dialogues, listening to people, we do a lot of community mobilization for girls' education and education in general in, as I said earlier, very marginalized, very remote rural areas of Pakistan. And, the moment we sit down and we invite the community, the parents, also the religious authorities, to a conversation about why is education good also for girls, but what is it with the school in the locality which is maybe not so good? I mean, maybe their teacher is not coming every day, maybe there are issues about the infrastructure, maybe there are no restrooms and water, drinking water and so on. By having that conversation and say, okay, what can we do together to improve on this situation? We have achieved amazing results. And we have seen communities in certain areas of Pakistan coming forward also and working together, despite being very poor communities, putting small amounts of money into a shared pool of funds to paint the walls in the school or to repair the compound wall. So, again, coming back to the theme of the day, the tolerance, this actively listening to one another and trying to understand where we are coming from and why we are not doing certain things. And I think it's important to stress that, parents may be illiterate, but they want the best thing for their children. They really want them to learn, they want them to have good lives, etc., etc. But sometimes just by asking them and saying, okay, so what would you want the school to look like? How should it look? And how can we bring you in and so on? You can get really good results. And I think that's a good everyday lesson for all of us, that this communicating and trying to understand where each one of us are coming from and where our concerns are and worries and so on, and trying to work together to address them, I think that's very fundamental.
Neil, coming back to our original topic of tolerance, or promoting tolerance and discouraging intolerance in any given society, what would be your last words as far as this extremely important issue is concerned? Because it is afflicting the entire globe right now in so many ways. We have talked about those aspects as well. What would be your last words to promote tolerance and discourage intolerance?
Well, I think there needs to be leadership. There needs to be leadership right from the top of a country. There needs to be leadership amongst people at a provincial, municipal. There needs to be leadership amongst religious leaders by demonstrating themselves that tolerance. I mean, in the context of UNESCO, they have interfaith dialogues.
Yes.
They have intercultural dialogues where they bring some of the great religious leaders around the world, whether they're from Cairo, whether they're from Istanbul, whether they're from Rome, and they come together and they demonstrate themselves that leadership in understanding each other. But beyond leadership, you have to have some of the means as well. And I think that's what Vibeka was talking about in terms of education and means. But the world, on average, is much more tied up than it was before. The world, on average, I think, is probably more tolerant and more inclusive
than it was ever before.
It's just that the world runs at a faster speed than it ran before. So when something goes wrong, you sometimes have that multiply a bit faster than it did before.
And the speed of information which is flowing out as well, because of the 24/7 media, information is definitely disseminated in such a lightning speed that whatever happens, Rebecca, anywhere in the world is known by everyone. Yeah. So that is the power of the media and being a global village. I think that also in some or the other can contribute negatively.
I mean, the Secretary General is reforming the United Nations right now, and I think one of the things that's driving him is how can the UN be a force for preventing some of the more worrying things that happen? How can it be a force to prevent war? How can it be a force to prevent inequality?
Intolerance, inequality.
And how can it be a force to prevent intolerance, as you said? And it's all linked together. I mean, peace and development goes together with... Peace and justice goes together with development.
Yes.
And you have a crisis situation. Humanitarian goes together. And you've got to get... And human rights is all part of that. You need to have those three pillars working together. And if they do, then it makes it less likely that somebody in particular who isn't tolerant, isn't understanding, that those views are not magnified into something that eventually leads to conflict and war. And the cost of conflict and war, which I've seen, are so great. It's worth preventing them.
Rebecca?
Yeah, I think we should also just remember every day that across the world, across countries, across communities, religions, etc., there are more things that unite us than separate
us.
And that's really,
Yes.
So if we keep reminding ourselves of that, you know, what is it that unites us? We all human beings. We all want the best for our families and loved ones and communities. We all want to move forward. And how, you know, that's a more positive way of a more positive starting point. So if we try to remember what unites us and not what separates us,
what divides us.
That would go a long way.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you for joining us in our studio and talking about the issue of tolerance and discouraging intolerance, whatever form or manifestation it has anywhere in the world. And Rebecca, thank you so much that we talked about this issue. We provided this opportunity and you educated our listeners in so many ways. Thank you so much, Neil.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As always.
Welcome back, listeners, and you were listening to an exclusive interview about the International Day of Tolerance. The main streamlines are the promotion of tolerance, inclusion, respect for cultural and communal diversity, religious tolerance to promote the global citizenship, as well as meeting the sustainable development goals. Now we switch towards our last topic, which is about Pakistan and Indonesia. Pakistan and Indonesia have signed four memorandum of understandings for cooperation in energy, trade, training and education. The first agreement deals with the import of LNG and POL products from Indonesia. Minister for Energy Sardar Awais Khan Lagari and Indonesian Minister for Energy and Mineral Development signed the agreement. The second agreement is about the additional protocol on the provincial trade agreement for 20 new tariff lines. Minister of Commerce and Textile Muhammad Parvez Malik and his Indonesian counterpart signed the agreement. The third MOU relating to trade facilitation, it was signed by Secretary Trade Development Authority of Pakistan and DG for National Export Development of Indonesia. The four MOU was signed between Foreign Services Academy and Center for Training and Education of Indonesia in the field of training. Prime Minister Shahid Hakan Abasi and Indonesian President Joko Widodo also witnessed the signing ceremony. Today, President Shahid Hakan Abasi and Indonesian President Joko Widodo held a meeting in Islamabad. During the meeting, they discussed matters of bilateral interest and cooperation in different fields. Earlier, Prime Minister Shahid Hakan Abbasi warmly welcomed the Indonesian President on his arrival at the Prime Minister House. A smartly turned out contingent presented Guard of Honour to the Indonesian President. He inspected the Guard of Honour and Prime Minister introduced the Cabinet Minister with the Indonesian President. On the occasion, three JF Thunder planes presented salute to the Indonesian President. The Pakistani delegation was led by Prime Minister Shahid Hakan Abbasi and the Indonesian side by its President Joko Widodo, and they discussed wide-ranging talks on the entire gambit of bilateral relationships. During the talks, the two sides agreed to give further impetus to the bilateral relations by enhancing cooperation in different sectors. No doubt that for Pakistan and Indonesia, the bilateral ties between the two countries, they are highly important and are widely significant for both of the sides. And this is a good sign that Pakistan and Indonesia, they are actually drawing up the lines for the sake of cooperation, for the sake of mutual interest, for the sake of having the trade side, energy, training and education. And as we know that we are living in this global age where we have to connect not only by the at the different forums at the international level, but also we have to build our tendency to welcome the bilateral relationship with the other countries. And Indonesia and Pakistan, they share the long history of cooperation with each other. And with this present government, what we have seen and observed is this, that from the couple of years, Pakistan is really widening up its horizons for the sake of energy, for the sake of trade, for the sake of cooperation in diverse fields. And not only Pakistan is looking forward from the South Asian side, Pakistan is also looking forward on the bilateral ties. And this is a positive sign between the Pakistan and Indonesia, that both of the sides, they are catching up for the mutual lines, they are catching up for the mutual interest. And as we all know that Pakistan is really working hard to get rid of energy crisis. Pakistan is really working to develop a different zones for energy, to have the different infrastructure projects for the energy production. But at the same time, Pakistan is also engaging up with different other countries to have the bilateral ties on this issue of energy and trade. We know this, that Pakistan is having a mega development project, that is the CPAC, but at the same time Pakistan is also focusing up to have the new tariff lines, and that is what the second agreement is about, the additional protocol on the preferential trade agreement for 20 new tariff lines. And this is what actually we can say, that this is an age where Pakistan is focusing up for the economic liberalization for the sake of globalization, where Pakistan is looking forward to end up the dependency on one single source of energy, to go up with the economic liberalization. And also this is an I would say the main streamline of this globalized age, where the states are looking forward to have the economic dependency. And also this is an acceptance that if anybody wants to have to stand up in the lines of the developed nations, that country must have an economic tendency, and that country must have an economic benefit for the rest of the world. And this is what we have seen in this Pakistan and the Indonesian relationship. The cultural diversities, yes, it is true, it is very much present, but at the same time both of the sides, they share friendship, they share their expertise with each other, they shared and discussed the common goals, and also they are sharing up with the energy and the trade, which is actually the mutual interest of both of the sides. And no doubt that in this age, Pakistan and Indonesia, they are meeting up with the requirements of this globalized age. So listen, this is about the 2 days program, in which we have three major segments. First is about the Trump's tweet towards the Pakistan, then we have an interview about the International Tolerance Day, and then we have this Pakistan and Indonesia's bilateral ties, the visit of the Indonesian President to Pakistan. And now we are going to have the weather update, and now we are going to end up our program. And today we have the credits of today's program. The coordinator is Arshad Askar. Program engineer is Mohammad Kurshid Khan. Program in charge is Ahmed Kamal. Executive in charge is Mr. Javed Khan Jadoon. And with this, allow your host Yusra Mushtaq to sign up from Perspective. And now you are going to listen to Urdu News.